Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today, we open our show with the latest health alerts from the county over the COVID-19 surge and a monkeypox outbreak. Then on Destination East County, hear about all the top festivals and events coming up across our inland region, including outdoor concerts, car shows, a food and wine festival on top of Mount Helix, a star party in Mission Trails, and more. In East County News, El Cajon is launching a nurse navigator program to triage 911 calls, and the Humane Society is waiving adoption fees countywide for pets during July. Our newsmaker interviews today are with Jessica Harita and Chris Williams with the Lemon Grove Improvement Council, here to talk about their efforts to reopen the Lemon Grove Recreation Center. Then from Public News Service, we'll have some top national news, including the latest on bills in Congress related to abortion access and cracking down on white supremacy in the military. We'll have news on a ballot measure to fund arts programs in California schools, the county's new Experience the Outdoors program, and a warning on car resale ripoffs. And finally, on the Yonder Report, we'll have some rural news stories, including how a recent Supreme Court ruling is impacting tribal sovereignty on Native American reservations and more. So stay tuned for the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ, where East County matters. This is Miriam Raftery with a health report. The continued increase in local COVID-19 cases has prompted the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to move San Diego County into its high-risk level. San Diego had been in the medium-risk category since the end of May, but recent spikes in hospitalizations and new cases have led the CDC to increase the risk level in our region. The high-risk level means COVID-19 is widespread throughout San Diego County, and San Diegans should take precautions to slow the spread of the virus. County health officials recommend that you wear a mask indoors when in public for now. Get all the vaccine doses and boosters. Stay home if you're sick and get tested. Avoid crowded places and people who are ill, and wash your hands frequently or use hand sanitizer. Nearly 90% of San Diegans aged 6 months and older are at least partially vaccinated, and 79% are fully vaccinated, but only about 58% of those eligible have had their booster shots. Cameron Kaiser, the deputy public health officer for the county, says most San Diegans have been vaccinated, but with this virus and with the prevalence and infectivity of the new variants, a booster is highly recommended, especially for people who are immunocompromised or have other comorbidities. Now, if you do get COVID-19, county health officials say treatment is available that can help prevent high-risk individuals from getting sick enough to need hospital services and even from dying from COVID-19. Pills are available, as well as IV infusions of monoclonal antibodies at multiple locations and community pharmacies across our region. Antiviral medications require a doctor's prescription and should be started within 5 days of getting symptoms of COVID-19. Monoclonal antibodies should be given no more than 7 days after the start of symptoms. To find out which treatment is best for you, talk to your doctor or healthcare provider, or you can call 211 to find a healthcare provider. COVID-19 is still claiming lives, including 13 people who died locally between May 23rd and the last report on July 7th. Most were elderly and all had pre-existing conditions. 14.9% of tests reported to the county are positive right now, though health officials say the actual rate is likely substantially higher since many people are now testing at home, and those results are not reported.
County health officials are encouraging men who have sex with men to abstain or practice safer sex to avoid spreading the monkeypox virus. Monkeypox vaccines are also available locally for people in high-risk groups. The county's announcement came days before the Pride Parade and Comic-Con, two events expected to draw large crowds. Nationally, most monkeypox cases have been in men who have had sex with men and who have attended rave parties or similar events. However, anyone in close contact with a monkeypox patient is at risk. 3 cases of monkeypox have been confirmed in San Diego County, and another 3 probable cases have been diagnosed here. Dr. Cameron Kaiser, Deputy Public Health Officer for the county, says, it's important to understand how monkeypox spreads. While it is not inherently a sexually transmitted disease, close or body contact with someone with monkeypox can pass the virus on to you. Dr. Kaiser advises, so it's important to ask potential partners about any rashes and if you're sick, to stay home and seek medical attention. With the national supply of monkeypox vaccines extremely limited, the county is focusing on vaccinating people at highest risk of contracting or having severe illness from the virus. This includes confirmed contacts of people infected and high-risk patients in county STD clinics. The county is working with representatives of the LGBTQ communities on messaging and in planning for monkeypox vaccination clinics. About 600 Jennie-Os monkeypox vaccine doses were administered before the Pride events to people at highest risk, and more vaccines are expected soon. Monkeypox is a viral infection that can spread through contact with bodily fluids, sores on the body of someone with monkeypox, or from shared items such as clothing or bedding contaminated with fluids from sores on a person with monkeypox. The disease can also spread between people through saliva or respiratory droplets in a close setting. Cases of monkeypox have previously been identified in travelers and residents from countries in Western and Central Africa where monkeypox is endemic. Since May, monkeypox cases have been reported in several non-endemic countries, including the U.S. Symptoms of monkeypox are similar to, but milder than those of smallpox, a related but extinct virus. The symptoms include fever, headache, muscle aches, backache, swollen lymph nodes, chills, and exhaustion. A rash usually develops within 1 to 3 days after the appearance of fever. This rash can look like pimples or blisters that appear on the face, inside the mouth, on other parts of the body, like the hands, feet, chest, or genitals. Symptoms can develop 1 to 3 weeks after exposure. Anyone who thinks they may have symptoms of monkeypox, including unusual rashes or lesions, should contact a healthcare provider right away. Cover the area of the rash with clothing, wear a mask and avoid skin-to-skin contact with others until the symptoms are medically evaluated. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell. County health officials are encouraging men who have sex with men to abstain or practice safer sex to avoid spreading the monkeypox virus. Monkeypox vaccines are also available locally for people in high-risk groups. The county's announcement came days before the Pride Parade and Comic-Con, two events expected to draw large crowds. Nationally, most monkeypox cases have been in men who have had sex with men and who have attended rave parties or similar events. However, anyone in close contact with a monkeypox patient is at risk. 3 cases of monkeypox have been confirmed in San Diego County, and another 3 probable cases have been diagnosed here. Dr. Cameron Kaiser, Deputy Public Health Officer for the county, says, it's important to understand how monkeypox spreads. While it is not inherently a sexually transmitted disease, close or body contact with someone with monkeypox can pass the virus on to you. Dr. Kaiser advises, so it's important to ask potential partners about any rashes and if you're sick, to stay home and seek medical attention. With the national supply of monkeypox vaccines extremely limited, the county is focusing on vaccinating people at highest risk of contracting or having severe illness from the virus. This includes confirmed contacts of people infected and high-risk patients in county STD clinics. The county is working with representatives of the LGBTQ communities on messaging and in planning for monkeypox vaccination clinics. About 600 Jennie-Os monkeypox vaccine doses were administered before the Pride events to people at highest risk, and more vaccines are expected soon. Monkeypox is a viral infection that can spread through contact with bodily fluids, sores on the body of someone with monkeypox, or from shared items such as clothing or bedding contaminated with fluids from sores on a person with monkeypox. The disease can also spread between people through saliva or respiratory droplets in a close setting. Cases of monkeypox have previously been identified in travelers and residents from countries in Western and Central Africa, where monkeypox is endemic. Since May, monkeypox cases have been reported in several non-endemic countries, including the U.S. Symptoms of monkeypox are similar to, but milder than those of smallpox, a related but extinct virus. The symptoms include fever, headache, muscle aches, backache, swollen lymph nodes, chills, and exhaustion. A rash usually develops within 1 to 3 days after the appearance of fever. This rash can look like pimples or blisters that appear on the face, inside the mouth, on other parts of the body, like the hands, feet, chest, or genitals. Symptoms can develop 1 to 3 weeks after exposure. Anyone who thinks they may have symptoms of monkeypox, including unusual rashes or lesions, should contact a healthcare provider right away. Cover the area of the rash with clothing, wear a mask, and avoid skin-to-skin contact with others until the symptoms are medically evaluated. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. This is Miriam Raftery bringing you this week's Destination East County, highlighting upcoming East County events, including the Ramona Country Fair, a star party at Mission Trails, the Lakeside Historical Society's Boutique and Vintage Sale, community concerts and car shows in several communities, candlelight concerts, and the Mount Helix Food and Wine Festival. If you missed the county fair, you can still enjoy carnival games, wild rides, live music, prizes, and award-winning foods at the Ramona Country Fair. This old-fashioned country fair will be held July 29th through 31st at the Ramona Outdoor Community Center. Hosted by the Ramona Chamber of Commerce, the fair also features numerous vendors and craftspeople, wine and beer tasting, and shows including medieval and Renaissance performances, Wild West skits, equestrian demonstrations, a cornhole tournament, and live music ranging from country to rock and roll. For a full schedule of events, visit RamonaChamber.com. The San Diego Astronomy Association invites you to a star party at Mission Trails Regional Park on the first Friday of each month, weather permitting, starting at sunset. The next star party is Friday, August 5th. Meet up at the Kumeyaay Lake Campground. For details on this and other Mission Trails Regional Park events, you can visit mtrp.org. The Lakeside Historical Society invites you to its annual boutique and vintage sale, August 4th, 5th, and 6th from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. The event will be held in the Old Community Church, which is also the Lakeside Historical Museum on Main Avenue in historic downtown Lakeside. Items for sale include glassware, hats, dishes, jewelry, notions, vintage clothing, museum items, and more. The Mount Helix Food and Wine Festival on August 20th provides spectacular views at sunset with tastes of top restaurants and beverage companies, artwork by local artists, and dancing under the stars to music by Surf's Up, a Beach Boy cover band, and the Surf Birds. This is a party with a purpose, supporting one of San Diego's most beautiful historic places. Advance tickets are available at mounthelixpark.org/events, and that's mthelixpark.org/events. The Fever Events Candlelight Series brings classical music to the amphitheater atop Mount Helix August 12th and September 9th at 8 p.m. These concerts feature classical and popular music played by a string quartet beneath the stars, surrounded by the glow of candlelight in a spectacular setting. The program includes classical works such as Vivaldi's Four Seasons, as well as pop pieces like George Gershwin's Summertime and Simon and Garfunkel's A Hazy Shade of Winter. For details and tickets, visit mounthelixpark.org/events. And again, that's mthelixpark.org/events. Cajon Classic Car Shows are revved up and being held each Wednesday night all summer long from 5 to 8 p.m. in the heart of downtown El Cajon, where thousands converge to visit displays of classic vehicles. Many enjoy arriving early to dine at local restaurants, including some with outdoor seating. The events customarily also include a DJ with music to liven up festivities. The theme on the next event, July 27th, is Hot Rods Galore. You can find more classic cruise night happenings at downtownelcajon.com. You're also invited to enjoy outdoor concerts open to the community each Friday night from 6 to 8 p.m. at Prescott Promenade in downtown El Cajon. The next two concerts feature Funky Rhythms by the Detroit Underground Band on July 22nd and the Billy Nation Band July 29th, a tribute to Billy Joel. Find more concerts listed at downtownelcajon.com. The La Mesa Village Association invites you to enjoy the La Mesa Classic Car Show, running each Thursday night from 5 to 8 p.m. now through August. Visitors can stroll down La Mesa Boulevard between 4th Street and Spring Street to see vintage vehicles and enjoy live music from local bands that play atop the La Mesa Lumber Truck stage at 3rd and La Mesa Boulevard, as well as a DJ during festivities. Upcoming bands include Santana Soul July 21st and Stand Up Guys on July 28th. Find a full schedule at LaMesaVillageAssociation.com. Santee's Summer Concert Series has performances every Thursday night from now through August 18th at Town Center Community Park from 6:30 to 8 p.m. Guests are encouraged to bring a picnic to enjoy in the park. The next two shows feature the Bill McGee Blues Band July 21st and Santana Soul July 28th. Find more Santee concerts at SanteeSummerConcerts.com. And Viejas Casino and Resort has some hot summer night entertainment lined up at its outdoor park at Viejas in Alpine. The next two concerts are Latino Night on July 29th and Blue Oyster Cult on August 5th. For tickets and details, visit viejas.com/entertainment. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions across East County.
It is no secret that 911 medical calls are sometimes not placed for life-threatening emergencies. Yet for lack of any other system, those moments are often forced to be treated with urgent responses, such as ambulance rides to emergency rooms. Such has been the case in El Cajon, but residents there will soon have another option for medical care. Upon approval from the San Diego County of Emergency Services on June 24th, the city may now move forward with a nurse navigator pilot program that will refer appropriate callers to a triage nurse line instead of 911 dispatch. Steve Swaney, fire chief at Heartland Fire and Rescue, estimates about 20% of calls to their 911 dispatcher will now go through the 24/7 nurse navigator program, or roughly 3,500 callers. In an update given to the El Cajon City Council at their July 12th meeting, Swaney said, quote, "Now they get the appropriate care. They can get into a doctor's appointment because they'll allocate some slots for us, and get them the care that they need instead of ending up at the ER. Mayor Bill Wells and Councilmember Gary Kendrick were absent, but the other three council members were in agreement that dispatching the correct level of resources to callers is vital. They unanimously approved $300,000 to be spent on the pilot program, covering the setup of the connection to the call center and a 90-day implementation period, and essentially subscribing to a certain amount of calls with them. Yet in the long run, the program will provide some buffer and savings to the city on things like increasing demand for new ambulances, fire trucks, and staff, plus their contracts with emergency teams like American Medical Response. Councilmember Phil Ortiz reflected that, quote, "Instead of having a fire truck and an ambulance respond to a call that is not life-threatening, we can triage it through this nurse. And they can dig a little bit deeper as to what are the symptoms, what's going on. This redirect is in no way a refusal of responding to dire or painful medical needs, but under the program, certain 911 callers who would benefit more from care in a non-emergency healthcare setting will be able to follow that route, improving both their quality of care and streamlining the abilities of emergency responders. However, participation is optional, and no one will be turned away from emergency services if they so choose." The city's staff report states that, quote, "The long-term goal is to improve the patient's long-term healthcare literacy, reduce their reliance on 911 for non-emergency needs, and improve their health outcomes by facilitating their access to primary care. The nurses will be based at a call center in Texas ran by Access to Care, a branch of Global Medical Response focused on innovating the delivery of medical care. No other California city has used Access to Care's Nurse Navigator program. According to the Access to Care website, nurses deliver through their triage system, quote, the right resource at the right time, in the right setting, to achieve the right outcome, at the right cost. Using local protocols and physicians' guidance, this team can learn more about what people are experiencing and guide them to the appropriate level of care, even by setting up transportation to services using a rideshare app like Uber or Lyft. Indeed, Councilmember Michelle Mitchell saw the impact of people's lack of transportation during her time as an EMT. As she voiced her support of the program, she said, quote, not to denigrate that person for not having transportation, but you take a unit out of service to take a person to an emergency room for something that could have been taken care of in clinic. She continued, quote, it leaves our paramedics and our EMTs to do a higher level of care versus these low-level calls constantly going because they will burn you out. Councilmember Steve Goble also noted that Heartland Fire and Rescue is a Class 1 ISO agency, meaning they are rated in the top 1% nationally by the Insurance Services Office. To Fire Chief Swaney, he said encouragingly, if anyone can pull this off, you can. To learn more about the pilot program, visit www.access2care.net/services/nurse-navigation. That's access to care with the 2 as a numeral. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Elijah McKee.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
This is Miriam Raftery with a public service announcement from the San Diego Humane Society. The days are long, the weather is warm, and who better to share your summer with than a new furry friend? The San Diego Humane Society currently has over 600 adoptable animals, including more than 275 stray pets found after the July 4th holiday, and sadly, many of these strays were not reclaimed by their owners. Shelters across the country are experiencing overcrowding, thanks in part to these post-holiday strays, especially large dogs. To encourage adoptions, the San Diego Humane Society is waiving adoption fees through July 31st for adult dogs, cats 7 months and older, and for small pets. By adopting an animal this month, you're not only providing a loving home for a pet in need, but you're also helping make room for more animals who need help. Each pet is spayed or neutered, vaccinated, and cared for by trained staff while they wait for their new forever homes. Additionally, you'll be able to contact the Humane Society's Behavior Helpline to get expert advice on behavior and training tips. You can check out photos and descriptions of all the pets available for adoption at sdhumane.org/adopt. The Humane Society is open for walk-in adoptions Tuesdays through Sundays from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at all four of its locations, including El Cajon, San Diego, Escondido, and Oceanside. Again, there are no adoption fees through July 31st for most pets, and again, that website for more information is sdhumane.org/adopt. The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice. And today, my very special guests are Jessica Heredia and Chris Williams. They are with the Lemon Grove Improvement Council, a new nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that's dedicated to addressing challenges faced by individuals and businesses in Lemon Grove. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
So can you start, folks, by telling us what prompted the establishment of the Lemon Grove Improvement Council?
So we started the Lemon Grove Improvement Council just to, have a nonpartisan group that could get together to improve Lemon Grove. As much as possible, come together, don't talk politics, and just try to get things done, things that we believe as a community are specific needs and wants. Mm-hmm. And because of some of the challenges of Lemon Grove, we decided to, you know, take action ourselves and get to work.
Yeah, I think it's a really positive example of citizens jumping in to fill gaps when sometimes government can't. For those that may not be familiar with Lemon Grove, it is a very small city without a high tax base. You know, the housing base isn't large. They don't have, you know, the big block, no shopping centers or hospitals or anything like that. And so they've constantly had a revenue shortfall, not exactly a deficit, but basically something like 80 or 85% of the budget goes for fire and sheriff protection, which doesn't leave a lot for anything else, whether it's fixing potholes or recreation programs or helping businesses, you know. So that's basically the dilemma that the city has long faced. So one of the goals that the citizens have long wanted and that your group is trying to address is getting the recreation center reopened. It was closed more than 10 years ago when they had a budget shortfall, and it's been closed ever since. So tell us a little bit about, you know, Jessica, maybe how important are the recreation programs for the young people in Lemon Grove and others who use the recreation center or did?
Well, I think that the rec center benefits everybody, whether it's families or children or seniors, even adults. You know, I know as a child for myself, I went to the La Mesa Rec Center often, and I really was mentored through that, and, you know, occupied in a way where I could do positive learning of, you know, performing arts and all kinds of sports activities.
Yeah.
Keeping, you know, involved in that kind of stuff instead of trouble on the streets. So
It can certainly keep kids off the streets. And especially in the summer, I know my kids always enjoyed rec programs at the La Mesa Rec during the summers on the, you know, times when I had to work. So it was great to have a safe place where they could, you know, have fun and learn something. Yeah. So how receptive has the city council been to your efforts when you went to them and said, you know, we've got these ideas to help try to raise funds from the community to get our rec center reopened?
I don't think that I don't feel that we got so much of a great welcoming, but I don't think that the city maybe understands that we're trying to kind of partner with them. Mm-hmm. You know, we'd like to work with them and not against them. And basically, if we collaborate together as a team, we can certainly get it done. So hopefully by going, you know, seeing that how well the Citrus Festival did, they can see that, you know, we're here to help. We're here to get these programs back to the
community. We're going to talk about the Citrus Festival in just a moment. So I believe the city did agree to at least open the recreation fields, you know, weekends or something, and with a goal toward hopefully eventually getting more open. So let's talk about your Citrus Festival. The Lemon Grove Citrus Festival was organized by your group and held on July 9th. East County Magazine had a booth there. It was a lot of fun. Lots of great, you know, vendors and activities. Tell us a little bit, Chris, can you tell us a little bit more about that and, you know, what the goal was of the festival and what it included?
Yes, you know, I would just like to just add just a little bit and not steal the thunder from Jessica, because she was the lead coordinator of the event. And it took a lot of time and a lot of effort. And it started with just a group of us coming together with the idea of getting the rec center open. And of course, one of the biggest challenges to reopening the rec are funds, money. And so we thought this would be a great idea to hold a festival as almost like a kickoff event to raising funds to reopen the rec, community powered by the community for the community, with hopes and aspirations of collaborating with our city hall in order to get it done. So there was an incredible amount of participation. It was awesome to see so many smiling faces. But when it comes to the real hard work and the trenches, Jessica, Teresa Rosiak, Kathleen McLean, they really, really carried the event. And so I just want to make sure I give credit where credit is due and allow Jessica to talk about some of that.
Well, go ahead, Jessica. And I will say it was certainly fun to go around tasting all kinds of lemon treats and trying lemon sprays and just about everything, but also seeing the kids out there having fun in the bounce house and the slides and all the other things. But So can you tell us a little bit more about the festival?
Yeah, the Citrus Festival, I thought what was really cool about it was we really highlighted a lot of small businesses, local vendors, whether they were a storefront type business here in Lemon Grove, or maybe they're mm-hmm. a home crafter. They yeah. had an opportunity to showcase their goods. Mm-hmm. Wonderful food. We had 8 vendors of food. We had 3 large inflatables from an obstacle course to a huge slide to a bounce house. We had a pitching area where you could pitch balls to a Velcro thing yeah. that would catch your ball. And
saw the burlap sack races going on and tug of wars. Kind of an old fashioned.
Because we could highlight, all the different things about what is so great about Lemon Grove and how our community just comes together and basically for a fundraiser.
Yeah, there was a yoga person giving, massages and the Lions Club was there. Yeah, there were people registering voters, all kinds of cool stuff going on there. So how many people turned out, do you know?
I think we estimated about somewhere between 350 to 400 people.
Mm-hmm. And how did you make money off of it? There wasn't an admission charge, as I understand. I know you had a raffle. What else?
Yeah, we had 3 really big sponsors that helped with our sponsorships. We had Toyota of Lemon Grove.
Oh, great.
We had Giardino's, and we had San Diego Pet Hospital. Those are all good Lemon Grove-based businesses that wanted to support their community, which was cool.
Wonderful.
We charged a small fee for the vendors, and that helped to get, obviously, more funds.
Yeah.
We did a raffle. And we sold some merchandise, so that was cool.
Nice. Yeah, I know some of them were donating in, all are part of what they made.
Yeah.
So how much did you raise altogether, and how did you have a goal, and did you meet it?
Yeah, we had a goal of, we had a goal of how much we wanted to spend, and we actually went under what we wanted to spend. Our original goal was $3,000.
Mm-hmm.
We got it done for about $2,200.
Great.
And we raised all in all $4,400 with, I think it was $4,600 or something like that.
Is that the net or is that the gross?
That was the net. And then the after all was said and done, after the bills were paid, we ended up with about $2,200. Mm-hmm. The money's still coming in. So that's been great. We don't have the full number yet, but.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
So what's next? How far are you from being able to get more things open at the rec center? And what are the plans to come up with that money?
We started coming together as a community, a lot of concerned citizens, parents, seniors, as well as city council members come together, and we met and we discussed a joint use agreement with the city as well as the school district to be able to open up the rec center on a more consistent basis. There's obviously cost involved in doing that. We want to have the ability to scale it out and start with programming that is going to have the most impact, but obviously realistic to where we are at in regards to fundraising.
Right.
We haven't got a commitment yet of any funds from the city of Lemon Grove, but I'm sure based off of the amount of people who would love to see it reopened, as well as the success of the Citrus Festival and some of the talk around town, that the city of Lemon Grove would be open to contributing in some form or fashion.
That would be great. I don't think there's anybody that wants to see it stay closed. It's just a question of, what the overall budget priorities are and, but I'm sure that having so many citizens show up to an event that was intended, there were hundreds of people there, right? That were intended to help the center reopen, certainly shows that it's a cause that the community cares about. And I think that always helps show the politicians, maybe something should be a higher priority than it has been. So do you think you're going to host another Citrus Festival next year?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think our team's going to take probably a month off and recuperate, and then we're going to come back together. We're going to talk about all the things that worked out great, all the things that we can improve upon, and how to make it bigger for next year.
You could maybe add an auction or a concert. There's a lot of other fundraising streams, possible. You pulled this together in an incredibly short period of time. Like, what was it, like 2 or 3 months from idea to getting all this together?
Yeah, I think it's a record.
Exactly. Exactly. Do you have any other events or activities planned?
I know that we do a running club there every Saturday. It starts at 7:30, and then every age and every skill set is welcome to come. Mm-hmm. It's pickleball every Saturday immediately following the running club that starts.
What time are those events?
The running club starts at 7:30 and it goes till 9. And then the pickleball starts right at 9 and goes to about 11.
Now, the recreation center is one of your priorities, but what are some of the other things that the Lemon Grove Improvement Council is working on to help businesses and residents?
So we have a couple of things going and that we have been doing for quite some time. I think we're coming up on our fourth year partnering with Caltrans, cleaning up and picking up our entryways. To the freeways, the on-ramps, the off-ramps. It's a really, really cool program that Caltrans has allowed us to participate in. And we look forward also to planting native trees and flowers and things of that nature.
Nice. Is Lemon Grove part of the Tree City USA program?
I believe they are.
Well, that's great. You know, I've heard that La Mesa has encouraged its residents to donate certain trees and shrubs and flowers. You know, somebody's re-landscaping. There's a list of ones that the city will accept, but that might be something that Lemon Grove could encourage as well to move that along faster.
Absolutely. And we may be able to do that by partnering with the Lemon Grove Nature and Garden Club. They are a wonderful group of people that come together every other month and they have a plant swap and they're very generous with their cuttings and all their fruits and all that. So that might be a cool way to kind of collaborate with another group. And
great idea. We should mention that the Lemon Grove Historical Society had a booth there too, and they've got a lot of exciting events coming up as well, including for those that are listening Friday this weekend. They have, I guess, an anniversary celebration of one of their historic homes that was actually moved when they were building the freeway to save it. So are you also involved in the downtown Lemon Grove improvement efforts, you know, the business district?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've definitely done a lot of cleanups down there, cleaning up trash and kind of getting that tidy. I think that's one of the areas where Lemon Grove could really benefit by making our downtown look safer and cleaner and a little more inviting so that our neighbors come and shop and spend their sales tax money here.
Yeah, the city doesn't have a chamber of commerce anymore. So there's definitely a need there, you know, to help out those businesses, I would say.
Well, yeah, Miriam, there's actually a group called BID, the Business Improvement District, that's been headed up by Council Member Leanna LeBaron. Mm-hmm. We've had multiple meetings in regards to how to support and contribute to our downtown area. You know, beautifying the area has been one of our goals, making it feel safe, making it clean. So we can attract the business owners, businesses, as well as patrons to come and visit Lemon Grove. So downtown is the heart of Lemon Grove, and we're definitely going to continue to do our part to make sure that it's beating.
And
we're also doing a program with SDG&E where we're going to beautify some of the electric boxes, which will help to minimize some of the graffiti. So we're very grateful for SDG&E.
That's great. Yeah, we've seen that happen in El Cajon and Lemon Grove with very positive results. Jessica, we should mention, it's separate from your, you know, the organization, but Jessica is one of several candidates running for the city council this fall. And we hope you'll join us. We're hoping to get a candidate forum together as soon as the filing deadline comes along and we know everybody that's running. Where can people get more information if they want to get involved in the Lemon Grove Improvement Council? You have a website?
There is social media and for Facebook and for Instagram called Improving Lemon Grove. Mm-hmm. And through those websites or through those Facebook social media pages, you'll find all the events that we're currently doing, as well as contact information on how to get involved and volunteer. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we're currently working on right now is a back to school drive. So we're looking for backpacks, pens, paper, pencils.
And when is that?
That goes till the Saturday, August 5th, 6th. So we will basically package everything that we've collected between now and then and put it all together for the school district. We'll be posting on those social medias, the different local businesses where they'll have boxes you can just drop right off, which helps to kind of get the businesses a little bit more foot traffic too.
Nice. So if you just go to improvinglemongrove.com or you visit Improving Lemon Grove on the various social media sites, you can get in touch if you have something to donate or you want to volunteer or get involved. What else would you like our audience to know? I'm going to let you two have the final say here about efforts to improve Lemon Grove.
Well, I would just like to say, and I'll let Jessica finish it. She's been doing so much that she deserves that. But yeah, I would just like to say, that if we want things to change, and that's not just Lemon Grove, that's anywhere, we have to get involved. That comes from volunteering, that comes from sponsoring, that comes from just showing up and participating. Doesn't always necessarily mean you have to write a check or spend any money. It's free to repost and share some of the positive stuff that are going on in communities like Lemon Grove. It's definitely rewarding. My recent memories that give so much joy is some of the things that we've been doing in Lemon Grove. I've personally met so many new friends that without doing things like this, I probably would have never have met. And it's exciting. It's really exciting. And it's addicting to get out there and be the change that you want to see. And I just encourage everybody, whether it's you want your pothole fixed on your street, or if you want to get in an endeavor like reopening a rec center that's been closed for 12 years, you can make a difference. You just got to get involved. And you don't have to do it by yourself. There's many, many, many people out there willing to roll up their sleeves and get in the trenches with you to make a difference.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Chris. Jessica, I'll let you have the final word today.
I think the thing that I think is so great about Improving Lemon Grove and the Lemon Grove Improvement Council is really that we're kind of trying to get the community as a whole together. So all the different groups that are out there, if you want to partner up with Improving Lemon Grove and what we're doing out here with the rec center and just cleanups and all that, please reach out, because we're really nonpartisan type community group. We've had people from all walks of life, and we want to welcome you into our philanthropy. It's what it's about, right? It's the best way to get your community really pumping. So
fantastic. This is really citizen grassroots activism at its best, I think. Well, I just want to thank both of you for joining us. Listeners, if you've just tuned in, we are speaking with Jessica Heredia and Chris Williams with the Lemon Grove Improvement Council. I want to thank both of you for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Miriam. I just want to say thank you. We're so grateful for your coverage, for your participation in the Citrus Festival. It was awesome to see you. And shout out to Lemon Grove School District for allowing us to host the event at the school district. So thank you and thank everyone.
Well, it was awesome. It's great to see efforts to sweeten Lemon Grove.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org. Next up, we have some national news headline stories from Public News Service.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
Conversation today is not just about the right to travel and the right to health care. It's deeper than that. It's the right to live.
Republican Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma Thursday blocked an effort to pass a measure guaranteeing the right to travel between states for abortions. Senate Democrats were seeking unanimous agreement on the proposal, so even if Lankford hadn't objected, it's likely one of his GOP colleagues would have. Democrats will now need to go through the standard recorded vote process if they want to pass the bill. The measure comes as states across the country have enacted abortion bans in recent weeks, compelling those seeking abortions to cross state lines for reproductive care. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says her chamber, which is firmly controlled by Democrats, will likely pass the bill soon.
Women's health decisions are her own. They don't belong to politicians in Washington, D.C., or in state capitals, or in the Supreme Court of the United States.
Also yesterday, the state of Texas sued the Biden administration for new guidance informing doctors they are obligated under federal law to provide abortions to save the life of a mother, regardless of state laws. The Hill reports the state is asking a court to block the guidance while the case is litigated. Meanwhile, the House Judiciary Committee held a public hearing on how the end of Roe v. Wade could impact longstanding precedents. Melissa Murray, a New York University law professor, warned lawmakers the court could use the same logic it applied in the case to overturn other precedents.
The logic that the opinion applies could easily be translated to a range of other rights that the court has recognized, including the right to contraception, the right to same-sex marriage, and the right to sexual intimacy.
President Joe Biden was in Israel yesterday in an effort to shore up support from the U.S.'s strongest ally in the Middle East. In a joint press briefing with Israeli Prime Minister Yair Lapid, Biden reiterated his administration's support of a peace agreement between Palestine and Israel.
Israel must remain an independent, democratic Jewish state, the ultimate guarantee and guarantor of security of the Jewish people, not only in Israel, but the entire world.
CNN reports the Biden administration also wants to use the trip as a chance to break the diplomatic ice between Israel and Saudi Arabia, which have long been at odds with each other. The House has approved a measure to monitor for signs of white supremacy in the nation's military and police forces. All Democrats voted in favor of the provision, while all Republicans were opposed. The provision was an amendment to the $840 billion National Defense Authorization Act, which funds the country's defense operations. The Washington Post reports lawmakers proposed more than 1,200 amendments to the bill this year, including everything from a new reporting system for unidentified flying objects, or UFOs, to a Department of Defense research program on the therapeutic application of psychedelics. Once the House approves the full spending package, it will go to the Senate for further deliberation. I'm Jonah Chester for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
A new ballot measure to support arts education will go before California voters in November. Proposition 28 would require that 1% of school funding go toward arts and music education. The measure does not provide new money, but rather directs districts to prioritize existing funds. Richard DeHaven is with Children's Playtime Productions in Palm Desert, which has offered in-school and after-school children's theater programs for 27 years.
Just as much as math teaches them 2 + 2 and how to get along in life and how to balance their checkbooks, the arts teach them how to have empathy, how to be better people, how to have confidence and interact. Confidence is a huge one.
Opponents favor a focus on reading, writing, and math and say the measure would limit school districts' flexibility, especially in tough economic times. Prop 28 would apply to all K-12 public schools, including charter schools. It would concentrate more funding in low-income schools. It would not raise taxes, but would direct about $800 million to $1 billion a year in existing funds toward the arts. DeHaven says that he's seen arts education improve test scores, reduce bullying, and encourage further academic pursuits.
What we've noticed, the kids who are exposed to the arts do much better in school and tend to go to college more often than those who are not exposed to the arts.
Under Prop 28, schools with more than 500 students would have to spend 80% of their arts budget on staff and 20% on supplies and training. The group Californians for Arts and Music Education in Public Schools, which is campaigning for the measure, estimates that 90% of elementary schools, 96% of middle schools, and 72% of high schools in the Golden State fail to provide a high-quality course of arts education. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
Mm-hmm.
San Diego County has kicked off its new Experience the Outdoors program. It will feature up to 75 free events starting this summer over the next year to increase public awareness of county regional parks and highlight activities and services available to everyone. The program aims to teach people about the outdoors, share fun, as well as promote equity, inclusion, accessibility, and opportunity. The program is built around three separate parks campaigns: the RAD Regional Parks Event Series, the Ride On Mountain Biking Challenge, and the Parks 101 First Timer Series. The RAD Regional Parks Event Series will include dozens of events at 12 different county parks, including summer movies in the park, hikes, fitness classes, ghost tours, and historic tours, bird and raptor presentations, celebrations, festivals, and family fun days. The Ride On Mountain Biking Challenge will include 8 monthly meetup events that will let riders take on 8 beginner, intermediate, and advanced trails at 6 different parks. Participants can earn custom Ride On socks and a collectible sticker. The program was developed by County Parks with the San Diego Mountain Biking Association and support of REI San Diego, the San Diego County Park Society, and other organizations. The Parks 101 First Timer Series is starting with 13 scheduled events that will teach participants outdoor essentials under the direction of county staff, including things like how to hike and bike safely, how to camp, fish, kayak, and even rock climb. The program is designed specifically for people who are beginners to outdoor experiences. Some of the promotions for the events will include waiving county day use fees and camping fees, translation services, and even providing participants with free equipment to use for events that require specialized equipment. For more information about our county's new Experience the Outdoors program, you can visit sdparks.org/experienceoutdoors. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
Cal Fire crews are treating brush along Wildcat Canyon Road in Lakeside with PhosCheck, a fire retardant. The treatment limits the spread of the fire from the road by limiting flammability of fuel, in this case, brush and grass. This will be the third year that Cal Fire crews have applied the mixture along this section of roadway. The treatment lasts for about 6 months, but would be washed away with just 3 inches of rain. County Fire and Cal Fire are now scouting 5 other locations for fire retardant application in our region. These locations, not yet disclosed, would be treated by the end of the summer. We asked Cal Fire whether or not PhosCheck contains any toxins or PFAS forever chemicals that are used in some firefighting foam. We have not yet received a response. However, according to a PhosCheck product information site, the main components are ammonium phosphate, clay, iron oxide, and performance additives that are trade secrets and thus not disclosed. These are combined with water from local water supplies. The company says that there are no known adverse impacts on wildlife or humans from the product. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Consumer advocates are out to stop unrepaired cars with recall defects from winding up with new owners. Federal law bans car dealers from selling unrepaired new cars and rental agencies from selling or renting them. Now consumer activists want the feds to forbid car dealers to sell at retail used cars with unrepaired safety recall defects. The Used Car Safety Recall Repair Act would allow the feds to fine dealers that sell unrepaired recalled used cars, even if no one has suffered damages or been harmed. Rosemary Shahan with the nonprofit Consumers for Auto Reliability and Safety says these cars are ticking time bombs.
In the case of the Dakota airbags, they've killed dozens of people and injured hundreds more. And as time goes on and the vehicles get older, they're much more prone to having this problem.
Shahan singles out CarMax, the largest dealer of used vehicles in the nation, because they sell cars with unrepaired recalled safety defects once they pass a 125-point safety inspection. CarMax, in a statement, says they share vehicle-specific open recall information in-store and online to ensure their customers know about open recalls prior to purchase. And they say the current recall repair system requires manufacturers to pay for repairs at their dealerships, not via independent retailers who are their competitors. Years ago, Shahan says, her group filed a complaint against CarMax with the Federal Trade Commission, but the FTC ruled they can keep advertising the cars as safe as long as they make the disclosure.
It's very deceptive, especially when they're advertising that the vehicles have passed an inspection. How could it possibly pass an inspection when it has unrepaired safety recall defects?
Shahan encourages all prospective car buyers to check the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration website to find out whether the car is under recall, and if so, she advises you walk away. The Used Car Safety Recall Repair Act was introduced last year but has not received a hearing or a vote. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
For the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, this is the news from rural America. Tribal nations say the U.S. Supreme Court is overturning legal precedent and eroding their sovereignty by granting states jurisdiction to prosecute non-natives for crimes committed against indigenous people on tribal lands.
It's an unauthorized and unconsented intrusion of state authority within Indian country.
Melody McCoy of the Native American Rights Fund acknowledges sometimes state law enforcement can help, but historically, tribal and federal authorities were better equipped to handle sensitive matters.
Not everything is cut and dry, and you're dealing with vulnerable populations.
Black Americans who'd acquired some 15 million acres of rich farmland by the 1900s lost nearly half by the turn of the century. Beyond racial terrorism, Xander Brown explains how some lost their inheritance.
Lack of know-how or resources can make keeping property in the family over generations complicated, said Josh Walden of the Center for Heirs Property Preservation.
It's one of those things that prevention is key. That's why prevention is such a component to our work and just to anybody. Everybody needs a will.
Ceding land to multiple heirs without a will and title makes the process even more vulnerable to attorneys or developers who seek to obtain profitable land for pennies on the dollar. Walden says this is the case in South Carolina in the Gullah Geechee Corridor, where Black properties have slowly been pushed out by increased resort development. In similar circumstances, Black families may not have the funds or trust to seek out an attorney.
The very people that could help protect you and could offer advice on how to protect your land may be some of the very same people that were seeking to take advantage of you.
I'm Xander Brown.
Racial and ethnic diversity can serve as an economic lifeline to rural areas, and it's grown nearly 20% over the past 10 years. Daniel Lichter, author of a new report from the University of New Hampshire, says the transition from baby boomers to younger generations is making the difference.
Racial minority groups are now entering a young adulthood, the period of family formation.
With growth comes challenges. Report co-author Ken Johnson says rural communities are often under-resourced, especially schools.
They're going to have to make sure that material is available in languages other than English, not just for the children, but for their parents who are going to have to work with them to teach them at home.
From bicycling to festivals to rock climbing, Appalachia, encompassing all of West Virginia and parts of 12 other states, is growing its outdoor economy. Jenna Belcher, a West Virginia development professional, says that what makes Appalachia a great place to visit should also make it a great place to live.
We want folks to have a great quality of life. We want the communities to really be invested, and we want tourism to just sort of be the icing on the outdoor cake.
For the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, I'm Roz Brown. For more rural stories, visit dailyyonder.com.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.